TTF 256 TTF 256 TTF 256 TTF 256 TTF on 256 today. You know, Matt, people might think that there's absolutely nothing to talk about. Man, thank God that tongue tying didn't last too long. We would have been launched into a 45-second Lou Holtz impression. Some might say there's not a lot to talk about, but Nick Saban is the gift that keeps on giving.
Hey, he really is. Like this, he has dominated the news cycle again because nobody has anything to talk about, and Saban is very good with a clip. But like, it was first of the week or middle of last week, first of this week, he just keeps giving. It's weird. He, over the years, the more championships the man has won me, I've certainly become more in love. Like, we're actively in love. But like, at first it was like, hey, he can be as gruff on the players and he can be as mean and surly as he wants as long as he wins.
Sure.
And now I start to pay attention to what he says. Like, oh, no, he just sounds like me. Like,
he's just a crotchety old man.
Yeah.
But we all kind of need that.
A crotchety old man who seems to take the side that I want him to take on most things, which I can't believe. Like, maybe, Shawnee, maybe this is a good time for us to reveal to our new audience.
Open the kimono?
Let the junk fall out. Maybe we should reveal what our true theory is about the past 15 years of Alabama football.
We are living in what our friends south of the border might say, Apres Los Ojos, which is the original movie that Vanilla Sky was a remake on. This is a good podcast.
It's good. You said that Spanish real good, too. You didn't even get your tang tangled. But yeah, this feels like a scenario in which Sean and I drove a car off of an overpass, brokenhearted about a girl. Again, this tracks so far.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't die. We created a alternate universe in which the Alabama Crimson Tide would hire Nick Saban and just go on this long run of dominance. And every year there's but because we're good storytellers, we built in some ups and downs for ourselves. But the downs are never that bad.
But for the past 15, 16 years, we've just been falling off that cliff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yet.
Well, the news that, I mean, I guess, you know, they're going to call it news, whatever he says. But, you know, they asked him again about retiring. The local press corps did. And he basically said he's not interested in retirement and referred to it as the empty abyss. That's what I like to hear.
Went on to say, you know, the same stuff that is bothering your game is bothering our game. And that's the stuff he basically said, until I figure out how to crack all the problems of college football, I ain't shutting it down. He says, I can't go to sleep at night sometimes. I wake up in the morning, think about all these various problems, and I got to figure them all out. And until I figure them all out, I ain't retiring.
The thing is, he keeps doing that, though, because he's like, anytime that there's a new rule change,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there's a stream of similarly but new minds in offense, you know, that come in and, you know, they form the Wildcat or they, you know, form a larger focus on spread offenses. Saban always seems to adjust, but he's always the first person to say, well, now if you do that, you're going to this. If you do X, Y is going to happen. And he's always right.
He's always right.
And he's usually saying, well, if you do that, it's just going to stack the deck.
For
currently successful programs.
Yes, he's constantly warning people, if you do this, I will use it against you. You want to have offenses that score 70 points? Okay. Don't think I can't go get players to do that.
Y'all are going to get real mad at my defensive coordinator because the other team's going to score 55.
You're going to be mad. Do y'all want to start paying players? Okay. But you better regulate it, because guess what? I work at Alabama. We didn't stop cheating. Y'all thought we did. We just do it better than everyone else. I don't care. I'll go pick and choose from the transfer portal. Every year, I'll just go take who I want. I'll cast off six of these five stars, and I'll get four more with years experience. I don't care. Is this what y'all want to do?
That's what he does. That's what he does.
I'm trying, racking my brain, Shawnee, to think of any parallel, because I don't want to just be two Alabama guys talking about how great Nick Saban is.
In a special time. I mean, people are going to be, you know, pointing to his tenure at Alabama as, you know, one of the best in sports. It's a John Wooden type situation. It's a Celtics in the 70s.
Red Auerbach, all those guys that had
Fatty Arbuckle.
Fatty Arbuckle. Mm-hmm. Rest in power.
Leadbelly Jones.
That almost turned into a Lou Holtz. I got my favorite artist. I can't tell you, just playing guitar. His name was Leadbelly, and just had fingers and moved like magic. But like Belichick and the Patriots. That's sure. A dynasty.
Sure.
And that he had some of that, but his teams were primarily defense first. All the time. Like, Belichick was really good at taking away your weapons. But
sure.
He did basically what he wanted to do. The only time he really took his hands off and let him do something different was the year with Randy Moss. The year they go undefeated in the regular season, but ultimately didn't win the championship because he had a bad matchup. So that one fits. The game changed around Wooden, but Wooden also just had the best players. And Wooden was an innovator himself. And Joe Walsh... Is that right? Nope. That's a guitar player. He's the analog man. Bill Walsh and George Seifert. That was who, when I said Bill Walsh, I was seeing George Seifert. But those guys, innovators themselves. Saban is not an innovator. He is a reactor.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, I think he approaches the game and just like you said, he reacts to it. He's never been very proactive. And somehow, you know, he's far surpassed, like, you know, your Tom Osborne's. Like, isn't that cute? Three championships in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, I mean, we don't say it because it sounds sacrilegious as Alabama fans, but Bear Bryant.
Yeah.
At Alabama, but also
innovator. He did some cool things. Yeah,
innovator. Sure. Like, you know, innovator. Had tough teams, did all that stuff. But
like letting black people play.
One, did that. And when he couldn't throw the ball, said, okay, we won't throw it. I'll have nine men in the backfield and we'll just wishbone the shit. Like, went out. He didn't invent it, but he went out and found it, brought it in. Yeah. Innovator. I don't think of Saban in those terms. Honestly, if I'm being honest. Jesus Christ, I swear I've done a podcast before. I promise y'all I have.
Yeah.
But... if I'm really thinking about it, I don't know that Nick Saban is that good of an X's and O's coach at all. I know that he was a defensive back, and every time I see him on the TV coaching, he takes special care to coach the defensive backs. And Alabama has had some defensive backs that were really good, but when I look at them, they're not known for producing at the rate different than anyone else, and especially given the amount of five stars he has, I don't think they produce defensive backs at a higher rate than anyone else with that access to talent.
Right. And I mean, there hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been 30 DBs and, you know, two linebackers.
Absolutely. It kind of moves around. Like, or two running linebacker backs. Linebacker you for a little while, and then the defensive line was strong. And yeah, there was some defensive backs here and there, the Fitzpatricks and the D. Milners who didn't pan out, the Drake Kirkpatricks, but again, that seems to be a more reflection of just talent. What his superpower seems to be is he is able to reach elite athletes and make them behave like they've got something to prove.
Yeah.
And that is the weird juxtaposition of the snarling, growling, crazed Nick Saban on the sideline, who is chewing asses, as he says, being mean to reporters. That guy, the juxtaposition of those players that he has and not hearing a lot of stories about, man, I really hated playing for Nick Saban. I'm not saying that some of them don't exist, but like with the image that he portrays on the TV, you would think that every year the draft class would say, I liked winning. I'm glad he got me to the NFL, but my God, I'd never play with him again. That doesn't seem to be the case.
And, you know, it's obviously something that he's enjoyed doing. Everybody asked me when I want to retire. Retire from what? Saban said, I'm going to jump into the empty abyss. All right. Of what am I going to do? Basically, the very challenges that I talk about and the things in our profession that concern me for you and me both in your game and our game, that's what keeps me going. That's why I get up every day. That's why I can't sleep at night. So why would I quit doing that? I haven't figured that one out yet.
He had to crack the code.
It's really what you said. Like, he's worried that this baby that he's led the college football world for, you know, nearly two decades.
Yeah.
And he's been, we'll call it 15 years, but nearly two decades. And it's not something that he wants to leave in the irresponsible hands of
Lane Kiffin.
Of Lane Kiffin and Dabo Swinney, like, you know, those. Because, you know, we always talk about, well, why should, you know, for years and years, literally, we talked about on this show, you know, why should Auburn fire Gus Malzahn? Who's out there that they're going to get? If not Urban Meyer or Bob Stoops. Mm-hmm. And now it's really, you know, there is that the Saban is the last of a dying breed. And I don't, you know, I can totally understand that he wants to hang on to that for as long
that
as
is. Time. And like, he has outlasted several legendary coaches.
Yeah.
Like Stoops.
And beat them too.
Like, yeah. Stoops, Meyer. You know, Paterno was still around,
sure,
during his day, which, you know, that program
had couple some things
ups
happened.
And downs. Yeah. But yeah, like he really took on some heavy hitters and beat the shit out of them and sent them away from the game. Like, he gave Urban Meyer the Saban flu.
Well, you know, there
Urban Meyer has three national championships.
Yeah, and he scared him away.
He made him kick a punter.
Because he might lose a game. Man, Urban Meyer, not a good guy. I'm actually surprised stuff like that doesn't happen more often. Especially the, you know, just the stuff that recently happened in Auburn. You know, because, man, a new guy comes in that didn't recruit you, and he wants to tell you what to do, and maybe you don't like his tone.
Yeah.
even though he's twice your age. You know, even though he's, you know, done this before with kids.
Like, the coach-player dynamic in football is, to me, the most fascinating in all of sports.
Sure.
We think about, like, the Juwan Howard thing that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Coach goes nuts, slaps player. Somebody, I'm struggling to remember who it was, but it was an NFL coach. Was it Andy Reid? Did Andy Reid pop one of his guys upside the head?
Wouldn't be surprised.
I think it was. I'm not going to hang that on Andy just yet. But whoever it was, like, there was a situation where somebody was sort of being a jackass on the field and the coach kind of hit him in the head. It made some news. But you take these hyper-aggressive, giant men, and who is often a very and then their coach is usually diminutive, if not diminutive, at least much older.
Yeah, sure.
How in the world does this not happen? Is there always not an uprising on the field?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean,
there is, you know, something more obedient in football players than is anywhere else. It's crazy.
Who did Latrell Sprewell hit? Was it PJ
Carlson?
Roll Tide.
You're not going to believe me, Shawnee, but I promise you, that is the third day in a row
that Latrell Sprewell
has that particular choking has come up in a conversation I was having.
I mean, you know, it'll happen, I guess. I mean, upstart, you know, coaches, after a bombshell coaching hire was announced this week, mm-hmm. And Mario Cristobal, Matt Hankins, is building a
mystery.
And Alabama, oh man, how good is Sarah, what's her name?
McLaughlin?
You know, don't think you're not going to derail a podcast.
Sarah McLaughlin?
Bringing up Sarah McLaughlin, man.
She loves dogs, brother.
She dropped the F word in a top 40 song. We'll never forget it. Mario Cristobal at Miami, he added Charlie Strong as linebackers coach to Kevin Steele and Josh Gattis from Michigan. Mario Cristobal has taken the guy that half of Auburn wanted as their head coach.
Yep.
And said, be my defensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
He's stolen Gattis, the guy who left Alabama in the middle of the night, to be with Jim Harbaugh. Got him to come.
He's there, but he was assistant coach of the year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or coordinator of the year, whatever that official thing is, yeah.
The Kirby Smart Memorial assistant coach of the year award. And now he's got football man Charlie Strong rounding up the assistants.
Cristobal is a master recruiter. Like, that is the thing that got him over in Alabama. That's the thing that got him hired in Oregon. That's part of the thing that got him hired in Miami. Like, Miami can be a problem. Like, there's no excuse. Like, their boosters have committed to giving the funds. They've got the coach they wanted. They've got an excellent recruiter. I don't know, again, like Saban, not necessarily X's and O's guy, but he has surrounded himself with good people. Like, he has taken the Alabama model and he's moved it to South Beach. So it shouldn't be hard to recruit. They've got the NIL money. They have no excuse. And that means one thing, Dabo better watch out.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, you see Florida, this comes at a time when, you know, Florida's trying to find their identity with Billy Napier in his first year. And then you have Florida State that just, did they fire Norwood? Or?
I think Norvell's still there. I feel like he is. Deion Sanders didn't take that job, so I feel like Norvell's still there.
You know, Deion claimed he had a couple offers from D1 teams.
And would not reveal. Would not reveal who they were. Clever. Clever. But, you know, Saban also, and before he made his retirement talk, he talked about there was a speech he was giving to someone, and it was just kind of unusual. He's not a guy that calls out players. And in this instance, he didn't name any names, but, and people, you can, you know, depending on what side of the fence you're on, you're going to say he's making excuses. Others are going to say he's just telling you what happened. Take it with you, however you believe it. But he said, we lost the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And we lost the fourth quarter in part because we had some injuries. And eventually those guys that replaced the people that got injured had not prepared well enough because they didn't think they were going to get play in time. They weren't prepared. The receiver certainly was not prepared enough because there's a couple balls that if he grabs them, it's a very different game.
Yes.
But he said that, and he went on to say that. But the big takeaway from that was his talk about Henry Ruggs and saying everybody's worried about what somebody's going to say about him. Everybody's scared to be a leader, and because he never says anybody's name, he just said, we got a guy in Las Vegas. Nobody, they knew he'd been out drinking, been with his girlfriend, all right? And nobody grabbed his keys because they were worried about he might get mad at him. Yeah, he might have been mad that night, but where would it be better for that guy? Would it be better for him right now to be at home, mad at that guy, or in jail and didn't get in his car and kill somebody? We didn't have a lick of trouble out of him here at Alabama, but he gets out there because nobody's a leader. And I was like, yeah, he's right. And I was like, shit, this ain't going to sit well with Pete Golding boozing and hounding it up, driving around Tuscaloosa. It's like, damn it. I just want to have fun with this, but no, you can't. So I don't. But because he's Nick Saban, people make that observation and then they move on.
Yeah, of course.
What can you say about it? And that's the insane thing, man. What can you say about it?
So in the, would you say that he is in the, like, American badass phase of the Undertaker's career? Like, he still has, like, he'll still go to WrestleMania. He might even win the belt once or twice. But, like, it doesn't look like he's even lost a step.
No, I think he may be in the post-American badass phase.
Ooh.
Where he went from, you know, original Undertaker. Shawnee, you've done something here, pal. You've hit my wheelhouse. All right. Original Undertaker was no frills, no thrills.
Sure.
He was
sure.
Here to look, yeah. Roll his eyes, look scary. You punch him, he's not going to move.
Didn't choke, he wear slam, like a light, purple, like a tie,
lavender tie. Yeah. Hell yeah, they'd be gloves. No frills, no thrills. That is the 2009 Alabama, 2012.
Sure.
Hey, we're going to run the ball down your throat. Tough shit.
Yeah.
All right. Then comes American Badass phase. We're crazy. We're batshit crazy now. You don't know what we're going to do. We're going to let Blake Sims play quarterback. Who cares?
We might fucking lose to Clemson by 40 one year.
Might do it. Don't give a shit. We're the American badass. Our entrance music is Kid Rock covering Metallica. We don't care about shit. We're going crazy here. We'll beat LSU. We'll play LSU for the national championship. We don't care. Some dude named Jake Coker can come in here and run this thing. Don't care. And then the last stage of Taker's career, he just wanted to have great matches.
Sure.
That's all he wanted. And like, he didn't have great opponents in the first bit, i.e. Texas with bum arm, stupid Colt McCoy.
Now, if Colt McCoy never got injured.
Yeah. Jordan Jefferson can't throw the ball. LSU can't cross the 50. Notre Dame shows up. That ain't nobody but goddamn John Gonzalez at Mania. You ain't fooling me.
He never even had a girlfriend.
Well, that never had a girlfriend. And next thing you know, here comes Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. Here comes Clemson. They want to fucking square off with us. Guess what? We'll retire your ass too. So that's where we are right now is, all right, we'll play close games now. We'll play crazy. We'll throw the ball down the field. We won't have a linebacker that you can name. Christian Miller will still be hurt. We don't care. But we want to give the people great experiences, because that's what Alabama has become, is this weird close matchup bunch now where it's tit for tat. The gap has closed in that way. In the big games, the gaps have closed up.
Yeah, It is interesting how, because Alabama seems just as successful, but you're right, those games have closed up those gaps. Like, gone are the, we're going to, take nice, neat care of Mississippi State.
Like, we have stopped, I can't remember the game, it was this year maybe, or last year maybe, Kentucky, something like that, and I said, it's our gentleman's 24-3 or 24-10. That was the old Penn State game.
Yeah, and you know what? It honestly, it feels like Stallings got there after one championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it just feels like, 93-94, okay, we're just going to run it up the middle and we're gonna make clean work of your
Kentucky. The gentleman's blowout.
Yeah.
It's 24-10, 28-12. Like, it's a couple scores, going to be comfortable, victory formation. We're going to do that. We're not just going to drug people anymore.
No matter how much we still really want to see that. But, I just like, want that last win. That's all.
This is a coach that in this year called out the fans for... Okay, I'm going to...
He's called out his own fans multiple years.
All right, stay with me, gang. I know you're going to get scared. I'm not going to take you into deep water. We're just going to dip a toe. So just everybody relax. Everybody relax. There were some social things that he dabbled in.
Sure.
That were certainly not the majority of the fan base's opinion.
Sure.
Those things happened. He did that. He called out the fans for being spoiled. he talked about, he lost a national championship game to Georgia of all people, called out some players not by name for not preparing well enough, lost a bunch of people in the transfer portal. Yeah. All those things happened.
And he's like, man, y'all got to work on your shit.
You got to work on your shit. I can't leave because y'all ain't got y'all shit together. I want to go. I'd love to leave. Y'all won't let me. That's who this guy is. That's who, and never a bad word about him. I saw him getting out of a $150,000 Mercedes that said Roll Tide on the front. It was wonderful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, this is a dumb comparison, but hey, it's throw the flag. It's like when Greg Maddux hit 300 wins. Everybody was like, we're probably never going to see another pitcher hit 300 wins. Are we going to, will there ever be another one like Nick Saban to kind of, of course, all you have to do is win, 90% of your games in 15 years and take away, six national championships.
That is a great question. It would be hard to see. I don't know that the program exists for it to happen.
Yeah,
because to step away from crimson colored glasses for a moment, take Alabama out of this. to say it's program X, right? The circumstances that had to happen for Nick Saban to be in this place. He had to go to the NFL and already try that.
Yeah.
It had to not work. And it had to not work in a way that was clear and obvious that he could still coach, but things just weren't right. Like, people didn't people will hold that against him and say Nick Saban flunked out of the NFL, and that's, you can say that because that's on paper, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But if Drew Brees' shoulder is okay and they trade for him instead of going to getting Dante Culpepper, whose shoulder was indeed garbage, like, things start to change a little. If Miss Terry doesn't not like South Beach, if maybe if they go to, I don't know, Green Bay, or if they, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
all
sure.
those things have to happen. Miami has to be the place that hires him, and then he has to come to a program like Alabama.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this. I don't know that this doesn't happen at LSU if he just stays there.
Yeah.
I don't see any functional difference between the program. I mean, yeah, there are money and that kind of thing, but like, I think LSU is certainly a large enough program to have pulled this off if Nick Saban just stays there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only real difference, I mean, I don't know that LSU's facilities at that point would have been in it, and this is really reaching because I mean
what does two more national championships do?
Exactly. You start putting that money into your facilities,
right?
Because Saban's gonna recruit in Baton Rouge just as well, if not better, than he did.
Yeah. But I think because clearly recruiting to a place is not a thing anymore. Like, most of the kids on that roster are not from Alabama anymore. Alabama is a destination, and the same can be said for Florida and Texas, or not Texas anymore, but like Oklahoma. Like, there's kids from whatever. It's a global recruiting or national recruiting now more than ever. But I think the key to that cog is you have to have a coach who has already tried something and failed it.
Right.
And then is happy being at college and is not already too old. If this happens 10 years down the line, it doesn't work. Like, Spurrier came back too.
Yeah,
like, sure. Spurrier went and flamed out, came back, and couldn't find his footing. He did get South Carolina to an 11-1 season. Their only loss was to Auburn in that SEC championship game. So
routinely won double digits.
Yeah, got Jadeveon Clowney to stay home, all those things. So
yeah, that's actually a good question because if he comes back and goes to Texas,
maybe.
After he leaves D.C.,
but you have to have the guy that's already gone and came back, because the only thing that will stop this, the part of the reason this dynasty existed at Alabama is because Saban is happy there.
Yeah, and
he does
the
not
school
have
is
eyes
willing
for any
to
of the prize.
The school was willing to kind of hand over the keys to everything to him,
and that's one. And they had enough infrastructure and money that when another big school comes calling with a giant payday, that they could match the payday and say, remember, you have the keys to the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you might not have that over there. Because I think it's very real that when Texas came calling, if it was not Texas, let's say it's Notre Dame.
Well, hell, I mean, say it's Texas, and I mean, it really is remarkable because then you become, can I go to Texas and win a championship at three schools?
Right.
And make
but
my
Texas,
way in that.
Texas make my name in that specifically way. Is a problem because they're not getting out of the way.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
It has to be a school with big enough cachet for you to leave the Alabama that you have currently built, your Alabama. If Notre Dame had come calling, maybe. Now, recruiting becomes an issue there. Not to say that Nick Saban's he recruits dirty players or anything like that, but like, he don't want to have to deal with the academic piece of this.
Absolutely.
That's another hurdle to clear.
And that's honestly something that, I mean, Mal Moore routinely is, credited for bringing Saban in 2007 to Alabama, but I mean, hell, he kept him around for 6 years before he stepped down. And that's, that really is his legacy.
It really is. And no, I just don't. So the original question is, will we see another one? Man, it would be tough to see a world where all the stars align.
Yeah, and it seems even less likely today than in January 2007.
Especially with the money being what it is now. The money, if it happens at a different place in a different way, the money might change things. You know, and I say that because Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma for USC is more of an indicator of where the young coaches' heads are at.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, like a guy like Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay, guys like that who normally would have stuck around the college game, the NFL now being interested in them, again, it's going to be much harder for a coach who has the ability to do this to be left in one place for long enough to do it, because there's going to be so many factors that say, we can pay you here, you can go to the NFL here.
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is this. It might go sort of the other way. After McVay won the Super Bowl, there was a lot of talk of, does he just retire? Maybe somebody gets tired of the NFL grind and wants something different.
Yeah, exactly.
And that could be a thing that's... You have a guy that gets hired younger in the NFL than people normally do. Sure. They go and they win a couple Super Bowls because they get a hot... They draft a hot quarterback. They get him on the rookie deal. They win 2 out of 3 Super Bowls. It's time to pay the quarterback. He knows that now that you have to pay the quarterback big money, he's not going to have the pieces in place. And he says, you know what? I got paid. I got 2 Super Bowls. And I sure would like to go live in place X.
Yeah.
And recruit. And I got NFL connections, so I definitely can get kids in the league. I'm just going to go over here and try this. It's different. I want to try it. That's what it's going to take for another situation like this. Because again, I'll reiterate, as far as coaching acumen, I don't think Nick Saban is necessarily special in that way. I think he's a master motivator. I think he's an excellent recruiter. And I think he sells himself, the man Nick Saban, more than he sells X's and O's on the field.
Sure, yeah.
And that's a lot of unique together to get in one place.
Well, you know, him kind of doubling down on that, you know, I'll be around for another 10 years. That's certainly comforting to Alabama fans. I don't know how
with modern medicine, I think we can get 20.
Hey man, he's in great shape. Well, I think you know, that's we'll leave it there. We're going to keep digging for God stuff to talk about, because man, we are really in the thick of a sports wasteland.
It is the off season. Like when I see the NBA All-Star game on the TV, I'm like, "Oh no.
Why can't we get into basketball anymore?" I've tried. It used to be my favorite sport.
Mine
too. Auburn's the top team in the country.
It was mine too. I love it. I used to love it, and I just cannot. I can't make it work.
I used to love jamming with my homies. God,
I loved it. Shawnee, I mean, what's rule number one, bud? You never fake the funk on a nasty dunk. Like, I live by that. That's the code I live by. But I can't watch a basketball game to save my life. I stepped all over the fucking ending. I think I can make it.